You're iconic, I think, Don. Do you feel iconic?
No, it's not my middle name or anything, so I don't feel iconic. No,
I see.
I feel like Don today.
Well, I just opened this book by accident to page 166, and there's a recipe for Hebrides fish chowder.
It's a great chowder for cold water, I'll tell you.
You can just never figure out what might be in this book.
Well, let's back up.
Nice to say that.
Yeah,
thank you.
And get the, it's called The Old Ways Table, Essays and Recipes from the Culinary Think Tank. It's fascinating, Don. I've been meandering through it. I mean, you have such a long history with this whole contemporary movement of from farm to table. You actually facilitated the founding of Chefs Collaborative. How do you feel all these years later? You, in fact, were absolutely right about it all.
I hang out with my children and my grandchildren. They don't seem to care much. So it's it doesn't let you get a swelled head about it at all.
Hey, Matt, I can just imagine that. I was at a Huerta conference this week, Don, and the funny part about it is I was talking to some people who just designed a new cell phone product catering for 25 to 34-year-olds with a device and a set of programs that do all the things that you and I aren't the slightest bit interested in doing.
There you go, you see. But there's some pleasure for all of us. I suspect that the three of us are kindred souls on these subjects of more sustainable farming and care about what you eat and balance and all that. And I think for all of us, it's wonderful to see it coming alive now, deeply embedded in.
When did you establish it? When did you realize that there was a need for this think tank?
Well, it was the end of the 1980s.
Now, that's early.
That's early.
Yeah.
And I actually opened the Old Ways door. The first office we had was in 1990, in the beginning of that year, and tried to sort out how are you going to get anybody to pay attention to this message. It's a little bit tricky. It's not just eat this or eat that. It's more complicated, but it takes a while, and I think people are so frustrated with overweight and obesity and diseases related to poor eating habits that more and more people say, well, I'm going to give this a try.
Uh-huh.
You were an activist before, though. I'm cheating. I'm looking at the flyleaf of the book,
yeah.
and you have a history in liberal politics.
I do have a history in liberal politics. Happy, very happy memories, except for the assassinations, which cut a lot of that short. But
right.
that's the real world, I guess. But I was very idealistic. I wrote speeches for the Kennedys and worked hard for them, and was legislative assistant to Ted Kennedy and a campaign associate assistant of Bobby Kennedy. So yes, I am. I was an idealist, and I still think that people have a good side to them, and if you can touch it, you can do amazing things.
Well, I'm going to not open my mouth on this because, there are people in leadership roles today that I can't imagine that they could have any redeemable quality whatsoever.
Well, I think that's you find a kindred soul here on that one. No question about it.
So jumping back to what exactly, do you have a nutshell explanation of what Old Ways is?
Yes, it's a nonprofit educational organization in that sense, and our mission and message is really that you can have meals, food, snacks that taste really delicious, give you great pleasure, and your body is thanking you for eating them because they promote good health.
That's wonderful.
You can teach that simply to children, and once you teach it to them, it becomes a lifelong habit, and that's where we have to go with this thing. It's too late to get the 50-year-olds who just can't change their minds.
Well, everybody seems to be jumping on a bandwagon at this point, though. It's amazing to me.
Well, there's a percentage of the population that clearly don't get it. They're the large ones.
Yeah, the person who looks at you and says, what exactly is processed food?
We say if you squeeze it and it sounds like cellophane, it's probably processed.
That's pretty good.
That'll work.
Yeah, we got this book. Have you seen the Twinkie Deconstructed?
No.
It's hysterical.
Oh, yeah, I saw the ad for it. I haven't seen the book.
Yeah, there's a whole book. He takes single... Yeah, he's going to come on the show, actually.
Wonderful.
Great
idea, isn't it?
Yeah,
it is.
I got to about page 50, though, and it got kind of a bit... It was all sort of a bit the same.
Oh, dear.
But the concept is something that you have to drum home with the kids today. So, I don't know. I mean, I'm on a mission because we just had our first grandchild, so I'm on a mission about this.
You know what's fun to do if you just had your first grandchild is go get from... one of the book things on the internet, the Adele Davis Bringing Children,
Yeah, I raised our son on that. It was old.
Oh, you still have it then.
It was old when I had it. Yeah, I still have it.
Yeah, I got it from my mother who got it from her mother.
Exactly.
And I'm telling you, it's just a wonderful take. There's a lot of stuff in the Old Ways table that come from those lessons about that. Start them young, keep it simple, make it fun.
Uh-huh.
You know, little pieces, don't give them a whole, you know, it's the secret with kids. We found out, you know, how people ask us a lot, how do you get your kids to stop eating junk food after school?
Yeah.
We say, well, don't have it in the house.
Exactly.
And what we've done is now tried, we say about teenagers and younger, if your bowl, when they come home from school, there's a bowl around on the table in the kitchen or someplace with cut up fruit, cut up bananas, cut up apples.
Yeah.
They will eat it. They eat anything.
Yeah.
as long as you make it easy, right?
Yes, that's right. They don't want to fool around with a whole apple, and they're busy running all over. But we've done it over and over again, and it always works. They just eat it. Those little carrots, those baby carrots,
uh-huh.
Gone. The bowl's empty.
And then you're ready to fill it again, of course.
Dinner's coming pretty soon.
Oh, dinner's coming pretty soon. Okay, well.
Now, do you actually have people that meet in this think tank? Or?
Yes, we do.
How many people?
The way we do that is we have a stable of advisors, I guess you'd call it, and they range from chefs to farmers to scientists, writers, communicators, and industry people that make products that we admire and recommend. And we talk to them, and we have meetings, and we get together. For example, we have a whole grains meeting coming up pretty soon. And we've got scientists and industry people and chefs and writers. You say, okay, what's the next step? How are you going to get more people to eat more whole grains? What's the next step in this?
Okay, so that's what you all talk about.
That's what we talk about. And one of the things that we came up with when we did the whole grains thing a few years ago, we started it. First proposed it in 2002, and it turns out the big problem is people don't know how to buy them. They get
know what they are.
They don't know what they are. So right. that was what kept coming back from consumer surveys. So we said, well, the answer is let's figure out a little symbol we can get companies to print on their boxes. So we made a whole grain stamp. Looks just like a gold postage stamp.
Mm-hmm.
And now over 300 companies, all the way from General Mills to the little smallest guy grinding up cornmeal, and about almost 2,000 products now carry that seal. And it's so visible.
Oh, that's a great idea.
And, you know, walking up and down the aisle, you know, you look in the store, half the people have the little baby in the basket, too, screaming, yelling, or whatever.
Uh-huh.
So people are stressed out, and they want help.
Right.
And they want to, you know, mothers particularly want to buy the right to themselves.
Now, let's give your website to make sure that people can get up to speed on the kinds of things you're talking about.
Oh, you're nice. And we have a wonderful website. It's oldways, oldwaysp.org.
Okay, and that's www.
Yes, indeed.
But there's a way to get involved in this with you, not just through the website too, which is to get the book and to learn as a result about all the concepts that are behind that. That's what I'm staring at right now. It's called The Old Ways Table.
Yeah. We have that on our website already, Don, so people can order it right off from the website.
Well, that's wonderful. Thank you. Peter, you're right about that. We wrote that to be sort of a conversation. You know, there's a lot of short passages and stories, and for example, at Hebrides, fish chowder says here was a bunch of people sailing on a boat and they wanted to have a fish chowder, and what did they have available in the markets? Buy it and figure out how to cook in it.
And then you've got invited papers, right, from food purveyors and from chefs and that kind of thing?
All
interwoven in the book as well.
All of those people had been at an old ways table one time or another with us.
Oh, okay.
And often, very frequently, each one of those, none of those were strangers to us. They're all colleagues at various think tank meetings.
Do you want to mention some of them?
Well, it includes people like Walter Willett, the chair of nutrition at the Harvard School of Public Health.
I like him. I like him a lot.
Yeah, he's a wonderful man. Frank Sachs has got a double appointment at the School of Public Health and also the medical school, and he's one of Walter's colleagues, and he's this heart specialist, cardiologist. And they've done these wonderful studies about what works and what doesn't work for health.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't know a heck of a lot about how do you make a splendid salad that's going to look good, and so we've worked with them.
Uh-huh.
The best chefs, you know. You're going to work with chefs on getting the food, the taste, the look, the crunch. So it's all the way from most of them have won prizes. Many of them are writing their own books.
Right.
And we've done the same thing with farmers who raise chickens and pigs and cows, raise them well and soundly and humanely.
Yeah, we had a wonderful guy called Paul Willis, who is called the Neiman Rancher.
Yes.
Pork, and he said, my office is on my kitchen table.
Isn't that a wonderful image, huh?
Yeah. Well, we met him.
Oh.
Curious enough, we were at the fancy food show. We went to we went by the Neiman Ranch stand, and there was Paul Willis, the Neiman rancher that we had never met. We had him on the program. We never met him. He was there with samples of his pork product. And he's just, he's just a farmer.
He's just a farmer. We have information about those people on our website, the Neiman Ranchers and the Bell and the Evans Chicken people and a lot of the other seafood people who we think raise their or farm their fish or shellfish well. And
yeah, that's a tricky one. The fish, I'm not sure I even understand all of that, the whole thing about what's sustainable, farmed and not farmed. And it's very complicated.
It is complicated, but it's been made complicated, I think, Anne. It's, a fish eats what a fish eats, and it doesn't matter whether it's a wild fish eating up other little fish or a farm fish eating up little fish. Mm-hmm. They all eat the same amount, and they all need the same amount, and if you take care of, as you do with chickens or pigs or anything, or yourself for that matter, what we eat matters.
You come down and sustainable is okay, and farming fish is okay?
Oh, sure.
Okay.
Now, could you hang for a minute here, because we need to take a break.
We'll come
back on the other side. Okay, we'll take a break now.
T1 Internet access wasn't affordable to many companies as little as 2 years ago. Service providers were charging in the thousands of dollars, keeping the benefits of a T1 connection out of most companies' reach. ASP Station is now offering the faster and more reliable T1 service at a price significantly less than 2 years ago. The speed of a T1 for both sending and receiving data is simply amazing and will change the way your business runs indefinitely. You'll wonder how you ever lived without it. Call ASP Station now for details. 412-661-6001. 412-661-6001. Log on aspstation.net for more information. ASP Station, it's the way to go fast.
Call ASP Station now for details. 412-661-6001. That's 412-661-6001. Log on aspstation.net for more information. ASP Station, it's the way to go, fast.
Hi, everyone. This is Tom Rita, the networking guy and host of Pittsburgh's most unique business show, Business in the Fast Lane. We're on every Saturday morning from 12 noon to 1 p.m. right here on The Edge, 1550 a.m. For the past 24 months, we've been bringing the best and the brightest into our studios to offer you ideas, advice, and real-world examples to help you grow your business. So save those honeydews for the afternoon and join me, Tom Rita, every Saturday morning from 12 to 1 on The Edge for Business in the Fast Lane, Pittsburgh's best kept secret.
Welcome back. You're listening to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig. Remember to check out our website. It's www.onthemenuradio.com, and you can read things we're writing and see what we're reading and see what we look like.
Well, you also find out that Peter's been hard at work expanding the favorite section, which always needed work and is getting it done right now. So that's a work in process. So don't forget to go to the new and favorites link, because I'm adding new things to that all the time, and also new updates in the update column. And pretty soon I'm going to get to clean up the pictures, some of which are the wrong size.
Uh-huh.
All designed to keep me out of mischief.
Right. And we have a guest on the line, Kay Dunn Gifford, who founded the Old Ways Table. I founded Old Ways on the organization and just wrote a book that gives you a little peek into it and a lot of help with the concepts, called The Old Ways Table. And you can check that book out on our website also.
And we were talking in the break about your work overseas. Tell us about the Australia Project.
The Australia Project there's two of them, two parts of it. One is to help them think through together with us and some of the experts that we're going to bring from other parts of the world about what kind of programs will really, really help children learn healthy eating habits at a young age. The schools there, as in the schools in Europe and in the United States, have failed really to educate the children about healthy eating and healthy lifestyles. And so that's the thing all of us are, as adults, responsible in some degree for. So the Australians are aggressive. They're healthy people by nature, and they are outdoorsy people by nature, and they want to turn this around, and they're going to spend a lot of effort to do so, and we're helping them by organizing the meeting.
Well, there's a lot of great product there. Now, we lived there in the 70s and before, and it was really bad, the food. But now there are lots of people that are into artisanal production and fine cheeses and healthful lifestyles and so forth.
And about the only undepleted fisheries in the whole world.
In Tasmania.
Around the whole country because it's so far away. So far away, the Russian trawlers and the Japanese trawlers don't go there because it's too far.
The South Australians have perfected sea ranching.
Oh, yeah?
Of tuna. And it's an amazing story.
Tell us about it.
Well, they have a tuna fishery there, because it's a place where the tuna come to spawn,
mm-hmm.
and from all over the South Pacific, actually. And they were getting overfished because there was no control. And so the government said, we're going to buy out the fishing license, and then we're going to sell them in a lottery, and we're going to have just the right number of fishermen, fishing families, to keep the stock at a stable level.
Oh, I think I read about this. And It's associated with a cannery, too.
Yes.
There was only one cannery left for the whole industry because it had been so overfished. So they all got together. No, I remember reading about that. I have a feeling we might have even have had something about it on the program.
Ecofish? No.
It's a different thing.
Literally sea ranching. They raise the small tuna to market size, and almost all of them are flown directly every day up to Tokyo to the fish market.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
High quality. So.
Yeah,
that's something unusual about Australians. They care deeply about it. And it's interesting to think about it in the context of our book, where we struggle in our industrial nation here to get the food system to clean itself up. But in Australia, they have a clean system, and they're trying to keep it that way.
Right.
So we have a lot to learn from each other.
Let's back up a little bit, Don. Your ideas were pretty revolutionary when you voiced them and when you started Old Ways. How did you get to that point? How did you develop this understanding and philosophy of food ways?
And I had some very good teachers. I was close for some years to Robert Mondavi and Julia Child.
Okay.
And they are teachers. And I was very, very lucky. It was an organization that they founded. I helped them make it come to life. And so I learned from them about you can eat the best tasting food simply, inexpensively, quickly. It doesn't have to be all gussied up. And so those lessons are part of Old Ways heritage, and they're in the Old Ways table, our new book. And it's the simple preparations, a little bit of seasoning, and having a joyous, pleasurable time at your table. That's the Old Ways table.
Right.
But because I'd been an activist before that, working in the government and for some politicians, I had some sense of how you can get a movement started. And I think I'd been in the restaurant business as well myself.
Oh, I didn't know that. Did I know that? Did you mention that in the book? I guess so. I read the
I think it just quickly passed over.
Oh, okay.
It's in the beginning chapter there about a little bit of my history.
But come from a family that cared about food, too.
Yes, my mother and father did. I had three siblings. We ate sensibly. Mother said, we're going to eat sensibly.
Oh,
well, that's a nice word.
Uh-huh. It is.
That means we had on Sundays, we had a roast beef.
Okay.
And she cooked it, and we ate it after we came back from church.
Mm-hmm.
And so it wasn't like we had to eat gruel all the time. We ate well, and Dad loved to get fresh vegetables from the wholesale markets.
That's wonderful.
So it's a lot of luck that goes into these things, you know,
mm-hmm.
where you get some training. But my siblings don't care as much as I do about the food. They got other lessons.
I see. The chefs, who started jumping on this bandwagon early? I mean, how hard was it getting the chefs on board?
It was hard to get them energized and excited. So that's why we formed the organization Old Ways did called the Chefs Collaborative, and it was built around the idea that they can change the food system if they insist on high-quality, fresh product, whether it be the meat or the vegetables or the grains, whatever it was. So that was the idea, and it started with a small nucleus of chefs, and it grew to be a big organization nationally, and it's still going on.
Yeah, and you're no longer associated with them.
No, we spun it off. It got to be big enough so it could run itself, and I said, well, we'll go, that's fine, that's the job here, and we'll start something else to do another piece of the puzzle.
Well, what do you think, I mean, this childhood obesity thing looms as one of the scariest things we've seen for a while. What else is on the frontier for this movement?
I think it's clean food, clean grown food. We had that scare with the spinach.
Oh, I mean, it's the spinach, it's the green onions, it's
yeah.
the, Yeah, I had food poisoning in London, and I think it was the hummus from the lounge in the hotel, and they recalled that. I mean, you don't know till you've ingested the stuff, and when people have their dogs keel over, I mean, it's scary.
It is very scary, and so I think that's one of the big issues. The solutions are very difficult to figure out.
Uh-huh.
We've all become very accustomed to having very cheap food.
Right.
And if the more intense the labor intensivity you build into it, the more expensive it gets. But I think people are willing to pay a little more now. You know, with the old ways, you remember from the introduction part of that book, that we, at old ways, we look at the nutrition of food, we look at the kind of environmental way it's grown, and then, of course, the pleasures of it.
Right.
So it's the three-sided triangle to think of, and it's each. I don't think any one is more important than any of the other.
What I was fascinated with was how you did the different ethnic pyramids.
You know, people don't eat nutrition. They eat food.
Uh-huh.
It's a hard thing. Well, it's a carb diet. You say, well, what kind of carbs are you supposed to be on, and what are you not supposed to be on? Well, it's, I don't know, they said, carbs. And so it becomes difficult when you, particularly we've learned with children, that they want to be very specific. They want to know what it is that they're supposed to eat.
Uh-huh. Like, you mean that
the food. You know, I won't eat beets, Mommy, but I will eat carrots.
Uh-huh.
So but they're not thinking about nutrition, and they're thinking about what it is that tastes good. And that it's in our gene code that we want the food that's a little bit sweet because our bodies run on glucose, our brains particularly.
Uh-huh.
So, and bitter has always been, in an evolutionary sense, a poison. So that's built into our system, our limbic system of our noses and our brains.
Even if you're Thai?
Yes, yes. Your mother's milk, if you're Thai, your mother's milk's sweet too. It's the first taste you get of real food.
Uh-huh.
And it stays with you for life. You can override it if you want to, but you can't live without glucose. You die.
Right. What's in the works? What's coming up? What's new?
Oh,
you're
it's
working
gonna be
on
new
whole
in
grains.
Old ways. I think it's more about teaching people the principle of managing their. I think that's the solution to overweight and obesity. It's managing. You know, we manage checkbooks. We manage our alcohol content.
We don't exercise. I mean, that's the.
We
other
don't exercise. Thing. We don't manage it well.
Yeah, Pete has been trying to manage the. The caller who was supposed to be calling us. And
how you doing with that? No,
I'm not having any success. That's just sometimes that's just the way the world is.
Well, maybe he burned the potatoes and he's desperate.
There you go. Well, anyway, let's do the web. Let's do the website again. It's www.oldways
oldwayspt.org. Oldwayspt.
What is PT?
Preservation Trust.
Oh, I knew that. Okay. Why did I forget about that?
And the book is called The Old Ways Table, Essays and Recipes from the Culinary Think Tank by Kay Dungiford and Sarah Bear Simon.
Yeah.
Oh, Sinnott, I beg your pardon. And you can purchase a copy, which you certainly should do. It should be part of your obligatory reading, listeners. And all you have to do is go to OTM's bookshelf, page down, and you can get yourself a copy.
Yeah, and
there
it's,
you go.
It's really easy reading. It's so interesting. That's the thing that's, you know, it's not, I mean, there are lots of things out there that are kind of didactic. This is not like that. This is really, how would you describe the style of it?
Well, we tried to make it accessible and chatty.
Chatty, okay.
So that you could read for a very few minutes and get a little story, and it might be like a friend of yours sitting down at the table talking to you.
Yes.
And we tried to make it conversational, but make sure that the recipes were interesting and different and varied. Tasty. Every one of those things, we tried it out and we said, has it got enough power of taste punch?
Well,
it didn't, we added a little bit more spice to it.
you can always beef it up.
Well, so in other words,
a teaspoonful.
Well, listen, we're getting a time signal to take another break.
Okay.
Don, it's been just a delight to have you on the program. And
Don, yeah, and congratulations. We're in your corner, and you know, let us know what comes up next.
Well, you two are wonderful to talk to. I had such fun with it, and thank you so much. And I hope people do go out and buy that book. It'll help you change the way you think about food.
I think so.
And on that note, we'll take a break.
Furnace working okay? How's your heating bills? You know, no kidding, an old or inefficient furnace can really add to the cost of keeping your home warm. If you want to keep costs down, get your furnace looked at, and I recommend Bolster to Heart Heating and Air Conditioning for that. The technicians at Bolster to Heart have been performing routine maintenance and installing high-efficiency heating and air conditioning systems in Pittsburgh since 1977. They're EPA-certified professionals who are continually factory-trained in all the latest installation and service techniques. They offer free estimates and don't even charge extra for Saturday service. They're a quality dealer you can trust. Stay warm this winter at the lowest possible cost. Call Bolster to Heart Heating and Air Conditioning at 412-367-3900. Maintenance or installation, Bolster to Heart Heating and Air Conditioning, 412-367-3900.
It's Saturday. You and your wife take the boys to the mall, straight to the food court. Your wife and Pete head for tacos. You and Danny want Chinese. You look up at the menu for a few seconds. You look down to see what Danny wants. But you don't see Danny. Your eyes dart around frantically. You instinctively call out,
Danny! Danny!
From the taco place, you hear a voice.
Hey, Dad! Change my mind!
Every parent knows that feeling when, even for a few seconds, you lose sight of your child. Imagine if he or she were actually abducted. Go to wirelessamberalerts.org. Sign up for free Amber Alerts on your cell phone. When an Amber Alert is issued in the areas you've chosen, you'll receive a free text message. If you spot the vehicle, the suspect, or the child described in the alert, call 911. Sign up today at wirelessamberalerts.org. A child is calling for help. This message brought to you by the Wireless Foundation, the U.S. Department of Justice, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, and the Ad Council.
Data security and speed can be what puts your business ahead of your competition. But cost is important too. You might be paying every month for bandwidth you don't use. Let's talk about your company's disaster recovery system. Is it as effective and secure as it could be? What are you paying for your T1 line? I'll bet we can offer you a better deal. We're ASP Station, a premier independent server co-location facility and high-speed internet access provider. Virtually unlimited bandwidth, co-location for your backup servers, off-site system backup, and secure access to your equipment 24/7. Check us out on the web at aspstation.net or call us at 412-661-6001. Easy number to remember, 412-661-6001. ASP Station, 412-661-6001.
You are listening to The Edge, AM 1550, WURP, Braddock, Pittsburgh.
Welcome back. You're listening to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig. We were just talking to Dunn Gifford from Old Ways. The Old Ways Table is the name of his book. We're going to actually jump back to a lot of recordings we made in London. Do you want to set up
some delicious food to report on as well, of course.
Exactly.
Which you're going to hear more about. But we had fun at one of the two restaurants owned by Chris and
Galvin.
Chris Galvin and his brother
Jeff.
And we caught up with
who's having a senior moment today?
Yeah, I'm having a senior moment. We had a very amusing evening because we talked first to the reservations manager at Galvin's Bistro. We dished a lot of dirt on other London restaurants that she liked and things that she knew about. So that was fun, as you'll hear in the next interview. And then right after that, Chef Jeff managed to get out of the kitchen to come and talk to us as well. So we had the opportunity to talk to him firsthand after having eaten some of his excellent food at Galvin Bistro Deluxe. Now, they also have another property where Chris is the main chef, Galvin at Windows, which is on the top floor of the London Hilton on Park Lane, which is a wonderful place to dine to. But we were at Galvin's Bistro, and let's go there now.
On the Menu is very happy, but a little bit confused. We're at a restaurant called Galvin Bistro Deluxe, and then we're going to go further on to another Galvin later, but right now we're here with Belinda Naylor, who is the reservation manager, who is, we're not going to say notorious, but you certainly have a lot of personality, Belinda, and also Jeff Galvin, who is the chef proprietor of this restaurant and who has provided us with a wonderful meal. We're going to start with Belinda explaining to us what's the difference between these two restaurants.
It's the difference between the price point. This is much more of a almost every day, people sometimes use this place like a canteen, whereas Galvin Windows is a completely much more expensive, more special occasion place and much more of a destination restaurant. This has become a destination by the fact that we're here every day and we can serve amazing food at very good quality prices.
Now, you love hospitality. Tell us why this is very special at this restaurant.
The customers that come here week after week, you know, sometimes day after day, and we've built up an incredibly loyal customer base, which is absolutely unlike anywhere else I've ever worked. We've worked really hard to make this place somewhere that's very warm and welcoming to people who come back here sometimes day after day. Very important.
Well, Belinda's being subdued. She's really a lively character. She's part of the attraction of this whole establishment. We're going to ask Jeff Galvin, who's chef proprietor, to explain what his idea is about the food that we're supposed to have here and that we have had here.
I think the food we try to serve, really, we try to base it around the French classics on that. We use very seasonal ingredients. People that come here, they're kind of, as the seasons change, they're asking us, for example, when the Pyrenean lamb, when it's arriving, things like that. They know what we're cooking. So we try to keep it very seasonal. Also helps us with our prices. Seasonal food in Europe, certainly a lot cheaper, a lot better quality, rather than flying things all across the world. So yeah, things like our Pyrenean lambs with us from January through to the end of March. Then it's finished. So it's a treat for people as it comes round of the year. You know, people like those little treats and makes them special that they're only here for such a short time.
Now, I mean, you sorted through all of these wonderful items you had for us, I mean, for everybody, and you did a tasting menu for us. Run through what you thought were your best dishes.
I think the dishes we did tonight really are our customers' favourites. That's really why we chose them, and very typical French bistro food. We started with the fin de clair oysters, which in my opinion are the best oysters I've tasted around the world. Quite a famous place in Colchester in England, near where I come from, very famous oysters, but I think the fin de clair from the Atlantic French coast are the finest. And we very simply, we just chuck them open, serve them with a little red wine, shallot vinegar, and just some nice bread and lemon. Very, very simple. Then we moved on to the terrine of Pyrenean lamb with black olives, a little sharp Grabiche sauce with those. Again, very seasonal and goes down a treat here. It's really very popular. Then we did a steak tartare, which is probably one of the most famous bistro dishes, which is our sort of raw minced beef. And we put some spices with those, nice shallots. And again, you know, people go for that here. It's probably our best-selling dish.
What, you have a secret about this. What is your secret about this steak tartare? What is the secret?
That's our secret recipe. We try to keep our sort of seasonings very secret. So I'm not quite sure I'm going to go into that in great detail. We've worked very hard to work on these recipes, but really just the different seasonings, really, on those. Tends to fit most people's taste. We don't do anything too spicy for them. Some people, a couple of customers, we adjust it slightly for their taste, but I'm going to leave that one a secret.
Now, you said when we met you tonight that you were just cooking fish. I mean, you do a whole bunch of fish. What kinds?
We're very spoiled, but being an island, we're very spoiled for fish, so we kind of take the fish from the cold waters of the Atlantic and in the Channel. So tonight we had some lovely soles on the menu tonight. With that, we take some cheeks from cod, which is quite unusual because it gives you a lovely little piece of flesh, quite reasonable and wonderfully tender and juicy. We had those on the menu tonight. And also some red mullet from the Mediterranean. We were cooking with some black olives and some fennel and some wonderful olive oil from Provence.
Boy, listening to all those things, how good. It was
how good.
Delicious.
How good they were, yes.
Especially that steak tartare was fabulous. I remember that.
Yeah, he wouldn't tell us.
He wouldn't tell us. And as everybody can tell me, it was loud in there. I mean, everybody was having a great time.
I bet it was ketchup.
I don't think so.
Now, you remember the guy at Colibri in Barcelona.
Right.
He put a little bit of balsamic.
Right,
in
yeah.
His. But,
and that was a good one, too.
He also said the secret was to get absolutely the best possible beef you could get, and I think this is the same way, too. Anyway, we continued the conversation, I think.
Now, Belinda Naylor and Jeff Galvin the scene in London is so complicated for restaurants. We love yours. First of all, tell me what is really particular and special about the bistro, which we're in now, and then we're going to talk further about the other place we're going to be in. I'll put you in the spot first, and then Belinda, and then tell...
I think the wide variety of our customers, we have everybody from the great and the good to people who it's their first time that they're spending money and going out, and it's great that people can come here and there's something for everyone. People can have the £15.50 menu at lunchtime and it's inexpensive, and then people can come here and they're the great and the good and they can afford to spend, you know, zillions on wine and stuff and cost them a fortune.
And your kitchen, what is your absolute best thing you do, Jeff?
I think we actually do, rather than dish, I think we do the very simple things very well. We could make a soup out of some leeks, some potatoes, some lovely smoked haddock from up in Scotland. I think really, generally, we try to take ingredients and treat them very simply, find the best we can find, and don't do too much to them. You know, we keep things very simple, and I think Londoners appreciate it. I think it's been, you know, the levels of business we have here has been proven day after day after day we're full. And I think simplicity, that's our key to success. We don't mess around too much. We're very lucky. Nature produces wonderful tasting ingredients. We don't have to do that. And some cheaper ingredients that we use. I think people are, you know, they get fed up with the sort of prime cuts of meat. We slow cook a lot of meat and some more unusual fish that we have, you know, and I think people always say, you know, perhaps they haven't tasted that or wonderful to see that. We have dishes, things like roasted veal brain is one of our dishes that we do, and people come from far and wide just to eat that, you know.
No, you never gave us roasted veal brain, so I can't really vouch for that one. Belinda, can you give us all your info, email, website, stuff?
Our website address is www.galvinuk.com, and the reservations email is info@galvinuk.com, and we take reservations by email all the time, and we will get back to you and confirm it by email for you.
And I can assure you, listeners, that these people are so accommodating to diners and patrons. I mean, it's just like, it's amazing to find a restaurant this considerate. So anybody in London should come here. And also, if you talk to Belinda, she will give you the whole dish on every other restaurant in London. Thank you both.
It's our pleasure. Thanks very much.
Thank you. It's been a really enjoyable evening. It's been great.
We were having a jolly time.
We had a great time.
We were clearly having a jolly time. What you have to picture, listeners, is we got there. We were a 45-minute walk away. We didn't realize it was going to take us quite that long, and it was absolutely pouring down with rain as well. So we were ready for some sustenance when we got there. The interesting thing is that one of the things Belinda told us is that there had been other restaurants in the property where they were, and they had never been successful.
Right.
But this one clearly has been is a booming success. It's in a section of North London on Baker Street, not too far from where Sherlock Holmes used to have his offices. So if you're headed there or you're headed to Madame Tussaud's Waxworks, why you'd want to do that, I don't know. But if you can, it's very convenient to that, too. And so, we're going to take a break.
Hi, friends. I'm Phil Marcus, the host of Real Estate 101, heard every Saturday here on The Edge, AM 1550. If you've been thinking about selling your house or buying a house, I'd like to speak with you. Choosing the right agent is one of the first and most important steps in the process of buying or selling real estate. It's critical that you choose an agent who has the knowledge and experience to not only find that perfect new home for you, but to also be able to guide you step by step through the often complicated real estate process. If you don't already have a realtor, may I offer my services? I've been a real estate agent in Pittsburgh for almost 30 years. I'm a life member of the Realtors Association, and I'm proud to say that I've earned both the GRI and the coveted CRS professional designations. Won't you call me at RE/MAX Heritage? The phone number is 412-241-4200, extension 154, or my email address is phil@philmarcus.com. That's 412-241-4200, extension 154, or phil@philmarcus.com. Let's talk.
The internet is crucial to your business. Everybody knows this, but did you know Nidhogg is the company you should call for internet service? Nidhogg, personal web page hosting for less. Business web page hosting, Nidhogg offers both Unix and NT server support. Nidhogg is the company you should call for dedicated internet access. Nidhogg offers DSL for high speed, low cost, always on access. DSL is great. It means no more dial-up. Oh, by the way, do you remember that thing called the telephone? Do you remember when people used phone lines to access the internet? Oh, I'm sorry, you still use dial-up? Well, Nidhogg does that too. Local access telephone numbers? Okay, I don't understand it all either, but I do know that I need it, and I know where to get it. Nidhogg, Nidhogg.com, 412-661-5917. That's 661-5917, or log on, Nidhogg.com. Internet the Nidhogg way.
It all happened so fast. It was loud and scary, and I was trapped.
Katie is a kindergarten teacher in Pennsylvania. She was a passenger in a car struck head-on by a reckless driver.
That's when I met my guardian angel. His name is Sean, and he's a paramedic. Sean was there for me when I needed him. He knew just what to do, and he knew the right things to say.
Choose a career in emergency medical services. Call toll-free 877-PA-MEDIC. That's 877-PA-MEDIC.
Pennsylvania needs more guardian angels. I had mine, and he made all the difference.
Here we are again. We're going to pursue our exploration of London restaurants.
With a slightly different twist, because interestingly enough, London has always been a place that has welcomed chefs from other parts of the world. But a trend that's, you might say, it's a little bit unusual is the number of young Australian and New Zealand chefs who find their way to London and somehow seem to stay. And one of those, Brett Graham, is the chef at a wonderful restaurant new called the Ledbury. We had a long and luxurious lunch there, and then we caught up with Brett right after lunch.
Now, Peter and I are arguing about what was our most favorite dish at this restaurant, but we're going to actually talk to Brett Graham, who actually is the executive chef of the Ledbury London. Hello, Brett.
Hi, how are you?
You started this all by asking what we actually...
Yeah, I just wondered, a selection of dishes we sent you today, which ones you prefer, and you know, what sort of preferences you have.
Well, of course, we like everything. Now, your restaurant is part of what's viewed as the second generation of the Brit food boom. Tell us a little about your background. You were at Square and where else?
I started cooking probably about 10 years ago in just a little restaurant in Australia, a little seafood restaurant, and I spent a few years there. Then I moved to a nice restaurant in Sydney called Bank. So only relatively, I've been a small amount of time in London, really. I think it's about 6 years, 3 years at the Square, and then I went traveling for a while and then opened the Ledbury. Nearly 2 years ago, about a year and three quarters.
We have not yet talked about the fact that you were at Bank. I mean, I actually jump back a bit. I mean, you grew up and started your career in a city that Peter actually lived in for a long time.
Yeah, it's an unusual place to start your cooking career. It must have been, as Peter would probably know, living there is a bit of a culinary desert, I suppose. When I was a kid growing up there, a good night going out was a night at the Chinese restaurant, and so that's sort of in Sydney was a huge step for me to go and work at a place called Bank in Sydney. Very good when it was open, really good. It's now closed, obviously. It's a huge amount when I worked there with Liam.
Do you remember a sommelier at Bank who then went to Tasmania and opened a place there with his wife? You remember him?
Yeah, I do. His name's Remy Bancal. He actually, when I went, before we opened the Ledbury, I went traveling and I made a special point of staying at his house for a night at Calstock, a little town called Deloraine in Tasmania.
You talk about small world. We've also been at Calstock. He's moved on, though. He's no longer there. You know that.
Where'd he go?
Well, just for listeners who follow us all the time, he got the Pepper's chain involved with Calstock, and then he sold that to Calstock and opened a new place. And if you want to know where it is, you'll just have to email us it on the menu, because we need to get back to the subject of the interview. But it is indeed a Piccolo Mondo or a small world, as they say.
It is funny. We were talking before we started the interview about not only how the whole total upscale end of London dining has changed, but also how the low end has changed. Could you tell us a little bit about what you think about that?
Well, I think it's just an observation. You know, in my short time in London, I've sort of seen generally eating out. I think in the other big cities like New York and Paris, the lower end, the brasseries, the bistros, they're all a lot better than what we've ever had in London. But I think now there really is some really good restaurants, some really good food at affordable prices that are starting up now, and they're really getting a good share in the market, you know. And as more and more fine dining restaurants open in London, it does make it harder for the top end people when there is such fantastic food now available at for more affordable prices.
Now, I mean, as I said, you're now viewed as the second generation of Rick Food Boom. Who are some of your best chef friends?
Very good friends with Shane Osborne from Pieter. He's a very good mate of mine. Also, my boss actually happens to be one of my very good friends, Philip Howard at the Square. Yeah, so they're probably my two best mates in sort of top restaurants around London.
Does Howard still run the Square, which we think is a beautiful restaurant?
Yes, he does. He's there a lot. He still puts in either 9 or 10 shifts a week.
It's beautiful. Now, let's go specifically now to the Ledbury. It opened when?
April, almost 2 years ago in April. So we're about, a year and 3 quarters old.
And how would you describe it?
It's quite odd when somebody asks you to describe your own sort of restaurant, but I think it's obviously, you say it's quite a sort of formal restaurant, but we try to keep it sort of slightly low-key, not too stiff. We're trying to keep the service a bit more relaxed. But it is, you know, I think the room's absolutely beautiful. We're really happy with the way it turned out. And, we're just trying to keep the service friendly so customers enjoy a more relaxed when they're eating, not so uptight, which is the case when you eat out in some really top-end restaurants.
Chef Brett Graham, please describe for us your restaurant, the Ledbury in London.
It's a small restaurant, 62 seats. It's on the corner of two streets, Ledbury Road and Talbot Road. And it's a nice little intimate space, lots of sort of soft furnishings, and some nice mirrors. Yeah, quite sort of formal, but I think the sort of atmosphere in here, we try to keep it as relaxed as possible. We try and keep it sort of, staff a lot more friendly than, sometimes people are used to in this sort of level.
It is, in fact, decor-wise, very formal and elegant, black, white, gorgeous. But while we were here, a woman in here with her baby and husband, and she nursed the baby. We had another woman from New Zealand come in with her two old aunties, as I expect, and they had a wonderful lunch. We had somebody who was an actress or a pretend actress in the corner, with people in jeans. It was a very mixed-up clientele.
Yeah, we can come up here. You can come up in the dining room on a Saturday night and you can see a table of six in suits or whatever, or even a weeknight more so, some business, people on business. Everyone's dressed in suits with their laptops next to the chair, and then the next table can be two blokes, a polo shirt and jeans on. We welcome them all to the Ledbury, and I think that's what helps soften the atmosphere as well. You go to restaurants and everybody's suited, and it's early on in the evening, you can make the atmosphere a little bit sort of stiff. You know, we'd have a table on a business meeting, and 3 or 4 tables on an anniversary, 3 or 4 tables on a birthday, special occasion, that sort of thing. It's really good, and it's nice to have a different mix of completely what you just described. You're totally right. It happens every day. They have such a really big mix of different people who come here to eat.
How about the food? Could you tell us a little bit about your food?
Yeah, I think generally speaking, I try really hard to keep all the food seasonal. For instance, 8 or 9 months of the year, there won't be a tomato on the menu, or any red peppers, or aubergines, or sweet corn, or courgettes or things like that. We only try and use them when they're in season. So we're desperately, you know, February is always the worst month of the year for me because you've only got chanterelles as a wild mushroom and very hard to get anything else. So it plays a bit of havoc with the menu and obviously other things are finishing off and you're waiting for peas and broadbeans and morels and stuff like that. So yeah, it's exciting in one way because you know spring's just around the corner. But, you know, as far as the food goes, so, you know, some luxury ingredients there. Occasionally, you know, things like scallops, a whole range of things from scallops to game. We're very big on game in season as well. We use a lot of hare, partridges, all of those sort of things. And I like using wild salmon when it's in season, so we won't have salmon on because we don't like using farmed fish. And, yeah, we just use what's in season and what's its best.
I just marked a few things off in the menu. Select three of them.
I like, as far as meat dishes go, we do a roast pigeon. We make a crumb to go over the top of the breast with molasses, sugar, and walnuts and dried olives. And we sprinkle that over the top. We serve with some confit legs, some Jerusalem artichoke puree, and a little tartine of Jerusalem artichoke and set. And then we do have a little skewer with and serve the pigeon heart and some foie gras and a little pigeon sausage on top of it. And I like it, but sort of because we do use the whole pigeon, we use the livers to go in the sausage, we use the heart and the skewer. So each pigeon we serve gets one heart. And I like those sort of flavours, wintry. The sauce is split out in a little bit of walnut oil as well, which adds on to that, you know, with the flavour of the walnuts. And the Pyrenean lamb, that's in season at the moment. I think it finishes in about a month. They're small lambs. I think they're around about 10 kilos in weight.
This was exquisite. It's cooked in hay, Peter said. We just learned that. After all these years in food, I just learned about cooking in the hay last
year. Yeah, it's actually interesting the way, you know, it's definitely not a new idea. It's probably the oldest idea, cooking something in hay. And I was reading a book about food in England hundreds of years ago. I read somewhere that they discovered that when they used to go hunting, they used to put a cut of meat, which they were probably going to eat for their lunch. So it was probably such an all-day event to go hunting, you know, when they used to take the horses. So that at their castle or palace, they would cook off a piece of meat, put it in hay to insulate it, to keep it warm, and obviously maybe they used to put it back in the oven to get the whole box hot. And they realised that cuts of meat and ham and things like that would keep warm and impart a really lovely flavour into the meat. So we basically toast off the hay a little bit, just singe it a little bit as the smoke's just starting to rise. We seal off all the individual cuts of lamb, put it on a rack on top of the hay, and so all that smokes around it, put a lid on, and just lightly smokes while it's cooking in the oven, rather than the traditional way of frying it off in butter.
So, listeners, you understand why the food is so wonderful here. Could you tell us how people get reservations? Is it hard? And do you have a website?
Our website's under construction. We're taking a little bit too long to get it ready, actually, but we are working on it. It'll be a couple more months, probably, and we'll have it completely finished. Reservations are quite easy, really. Lunches are normally quite easy. We're not normally full for lunches. Dinners can be a little bit more tricky if you're specific about your time. But normally it's only Friday and Saturday night, so they're the real, really hard ones to get. You need to think a week or two in advance.
You'll let us know what your website is and we'll let everybody know.
Yeah, we've already got the address. It's www.theledbury.com.
Could you spell it?
Yeah, theledbury.com. And it's just a cover page at the moment, so it'll welcome you into the site. Just say it's under construction, which it is.
Well, we had a delightful time. Thank you.
Thank you very much, honey.
Well, that was so good, food.
Just in case you're wondering about the mystery town in Australia, it's Newcastle, New South Wales.
Right.
We never actually mentioned that on the way through, and Brett was telling me that somebody's about to open a nice new restaurant right on the beach, in the lighthouse, yeah. right near one of the beaches that I used to frequent. So that's really an exciting development.
Isn't it funny, everybody's moving around so much more in the culinary world.
But cooking with hay, look for meat cooked in hay. We had it somewhere else not too long ago. We loved it, and we loved it again at the Ledbury. And we'll see you same time, same place next week.
Bye-bye.
Jazzin' Around with David Jay is next on The Edge, AM 1550.
I know I need to pay attention to my health, but I just can't seem to find the time. Between rushing to work and taking care of the kids, there's not much time left over for me. So I decided to start small by eating more fruits and vegetables and being more active. And then I got the family to make some changes too. We started by keeping a bowl of fresh fruit on the counter, and I limit the amount of sweet snacks I keep in the house. I've also found some creative ways to add more vegetables to our meals. We're taking more walks, and on the weekends, we head down to the pool at the rec center. It doesn't happen every day, but it does happen. You don't have to change your entire life to be healthier. Just make some simple changes and include your family. You'll see how easy and fun it can be.
You can make a difference. Eat smart, play hard. And when you do, your kids will too. A challenge from USDA.
You are listening to The Edge, AM 1550, WURP, Braddock, Pittsburgh.